Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back, Redheads, to another episode of the Redheads Book Club September edition. It's back to school. There's never a more appropriate time for the Redheads or an appropriate time to become a Redhead than in the fall. If this is your first episode listening along with us, welcome. We're so happy to have you. The Redheads has kind of become like a global phenomenon. I don't know if you guys know this, but we're just kind of like killing it. Hey, girls.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi,
everyone. Oh my God, you guys are like Charlie's Angels.
Hey.
Good morning, Jax.
Good morning, Charlie.
Okay, well, let's catch up with all the girlies before we dive in. And we'll just talk about, I also just want to talk about the state of the Redheads. I'm feeling so Redheads proud. Anyone else?
Always.
Incredibly Redheads proud.
Yeah, and we've been doing this podcast for 2.5 years now, which is insane. This is our 34th book, which is insane.
That's crazy.
Right? And I just love the Redheads because all of our past episodes are evergreen, so you could listen to an episode from 2 years ago and there's nothing in it that's super topical, aside from our personal life updates like Dana getting married or me moving or me having a baby or being pregnant. Like, the content of the episodes are evergreen. So I look at the numbers from our old podcasts and like they live on as if they were recorded last week, and I think that's really cool. But if you are listening to us in real time, welcome to the episode. We've got a great one for you because this month's book was unlike all our other books. It was our second nonfiction book. It was our second memoir. If you're wondering what our first was, it was I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings by Maya Angelou,
and also Claudia's book. Thank you.
And also Claudia's book, thank you, third memoir. All very different from one another. I'm excited to talk about this month's book, but before we do, I gotta know what's going on with my girlies. I feel like I've been so busy, so sometimes the most I catch up with you guys is on the Redheads. I'm gonna start with Snitch because you had a very busy week in Zion and Lake Powell, and I know everyone wants to hear about it. Snitch, how are you?
I'm so great. I mean, I'm depressed to be here. Not here.
Whoa.
But like back in the city.
Oh, my God.
Like
mean.
I went to Lake Powell and Zion last week, and it was just, like, so sickening, you know, like, to, like, see the world. And it was just, like, such a blast. Like, I just couldn't recommend it enough. If anybody is thinking about going, you should absolutely go.
Do you feel like the timing of your trip and the timing of this book, like, were kind of just, like, blowing your mind on where you're at in your life?
Yes. So, like, I purposely left the book to read during this trip. So that, like, because, like, I knew, you know? Like, when you're just, like, in nature like that and, like, going on hikes and, like, going to national parks, like, you know that you're going to have, like, a revelation. So, like, I was, like, and I know this whole book is just a book of revelation. So I was, like, why not just, like, you know, just put them together?
Snitch, that is so meta.
Right?
Yeah, I feel like you realized a lot of stuff in the last few weeks, and I'm going to be probing you about all of it. Bex, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for asking. Similar to Snitch, I had a trip in the beauty of our nation. I was in Montana and Wyoming. It felt like very similar to like the mountains and the rocks. I was in Big Sky and Yellowstone and the Grand Tetons and Jackson Hole. So
wait, how haven't we spoken? I'm dying to go there.
It was incredible. Snitch, I have like the itinerary of a lifetime for you.
Oh my
God. I actually got a ton of redhead requests to like share my itinerary, which like I feel sort of cheesy doing, but like you can DM me and I'll share thoughts with you.
Why don't you do like what Snitch did and post an Instagram story like with the text?
I mean, because people care about Snitch and like no one cares about me.
But they are asking you.
They're asking.
Oh, thanks. Okay, maybe I will. But it was very restorative. Just like the mountain air and crystal clear waters of lakes mm-hmm. is incredibly nourishing of the mind, body, soul. And I will say that like coming back to New York City of all places after the fact was torture.
Horrendous.
Waiting an hour for my bags, waiting an hour for a cab. It was like I had never left. I was like, wow, like all of that healing unraveled.
Yeah.
But couldn't recommend it enough. And Snitch, I've been to Zion before and it's so incredible. And but like when I went to the Narrows, I was in like these like massive like overalls that like went up to my neck and like almost was washed away. So yeah, I'm glad you made it alive, girl.
Yeah, I fucking hated the Narrows, but I just knew I had to do it because like that's what you do in Zion.
That's what you do.
We literally walked for 10 minutes and I was like, okay, is everyone you're good? Can we
did everyone get their piece of the Narrows? Great.
Yeah, exactly. No, Emily and Ryan were like okay, I guess, and I'm like, no, we're fucking turning around. I couldn't.
And
yes, but I
just saw like the crisp white sneakers go into that milky muddy water, and I was like,
I did that on purpose. Like I obviously knew. Also, but I threw those shoes in the wash, and they're completely fine now, for the record. But it was definitely interesting. But I couldn't agree more about like coming back to New York was like literally like when I was like flying and I saw like the Freedom Tower and the Empire State Building, I was like, literally kill me, like actually kill me.
Damn.
Yeah.
Dana, you've also been to Zion, yet you're being so quiet.
I didn't want to interrupt Snitch's soliloquy, but I was excited to ask you about the Narrows, and then I read that you hated it. So I was like, oh, of course, the one thing I had done on that trip.
What else did you do?
King's Landing? Angel's Landing.
Angel's Landing.
Which was closed, actually, when I went, like, the tippy top, the whole point of going with, like, the chains. But it was still, like, an epic hike.
I heard Angel's Landing is, like, hard as fuck.
I did Angel's Landing and went to the tippy top, and it was so terrifying and so hard. And I look back, and I think it was a 10-mile hike, which is unbelievable that someone conned me into doing that. So yeah, I guess it was intense. Not check the mileage before you go.
We went, like, really deep, too, into the Narrows. I think we walked for 20 miles there and back. Like, it was crazy. We got to the point where it forks and you pick the easier or the harder one, and we picked the harder one. I was, like, scaling rocks and, like, slipping and soaking wet. I kind of loved it, though.
Yeah, you would.
But otherwise, not as much interesting things to report as your two girlies' trips. I've been doing a lot of beach time, enjoying the last licks of summer. I ran into a redhead at the OAR Dispatch concert that I went to on Sunday at PNC. It was so exciting. And otherwise, just like so excited to talk about this book.
Same.
Great. Okay.
Jack,
I'm excited.
How are you?
I'm good. I mean, I've been home since last episode, just trying to get everything in order in my new house. I've just been like podcasting every single day, and everyone knows everything about me because I'm always talking about it on a podcast. But life is good. I'm enjoying suburban life, being a homeowner, and I actually read a lot of good books this month, which I'm so excited to share. And I'm excited just for another episode with my girlies, but I am jealous of all of your travels. We definitely need to do a Redheads offsite at some point.
We should do it like in the mountains. It's the perfect place to read.
Yes. Yeah, we really should at some point in the near future. Also, speaking of Redheads tings, we have new merch dropping very, very soon, and I'm so excited. And I will post everything to our Instagram, including like when it will be available and all of the different things that we're making. We have a lot of stuff like that you've already seen, bringing back our classic sweatshirts with our logo, different material sweatshirt because we heard your cries that the last ones were too thick. But we also have some new designs and some new products. So I'm just so excited for all of it, and stay tuned for all of it. But just know Redheads merch is coming, and it's so premium because our logo and our vibe and our brand is like so on point.
Yeah,
it's incredibly on point. And yeah, it appeals to every type of creature, you know? Like I showed the merch to my boyfriend Evan, and the thing that I didn't expect him to like was his favorite thing, you know?
It's which was
just like the logo of our little lady on the hat. He was like, oh my very God, much.
So I like the hats the best too. I think those.
He
are
was
awesome.
So drawn to her. I was like, interesting choice, my friend. Go whatever the wind takes you.
Well, we have two hats dropping. One is our woman logo, which is she's very like ambiguous. Like, who is she? What does she stand for? And then we also have a hat that says like the Redheads Book Club in our font. And Zach already stole that hat, and he actually wasn't gravitating towards the female icon. I was like, well, she's our icon. Like, we are having a hat with her. But I'm so glad to know like there's something for everyone, which
something
I felt
everyone
that there would be.
It really me. Gives me Sorella vibes, which was our underground sorority at Colgate. Like, that woman is Sorella.
Oh, wow. Okay, and you're just gonna like blow, you're just gonna talk about it on a public forum. Like, I still
no, like, so like, wait, you guys are gonna come after you,
Jax. It's been 10 years.
No, but like, I don't know, I'm just so like, it's so ingrained in me, like, yeah, not to talk about it, that
brainwashed.
I'm like triggered.
No, it's just like, we're gonna like have to chug beers later, so
yeah, we're gonna get in trouble and we're gonna be under like disciplinary review. But thanks, Dana. Yes, but I agree, it does give that vibe. Okay, let's get into this month's episode, shall we? Because we read Everything I Know About Love by Dolly Alderton. It was a snitch's choice, and it was a departure for the snitch, which we love to see. I feel like what I'm noticing now that we're going on 3 years of doing this show is each of us get three book picks a year, and Snitch's September pick is always like sort of different from her other picks. It's probably like her first two were too similar. Now she's trying to branch out. That was like We Are the Brennans. It was different from like your usual rom-coms because you had done Layla and Twice in a Blue Moon. This year you did two of the exact same book, All Roads Lead Here in the Simple Wild. So I felt like you really needed to do something different. I feel like for me, and you'll notice it when I choose my next book, one book of the year, I always pick like the next book that I wanted to read regardless. And it's like a historical fiction book. Then I also will pick one of a more trendier book. And that was like A Slow Fire Burning last year, which is that's my choice coming up this month. So I am picking somewhat of a trendy book. And that's what I'm noticing. Dana always closes out the year with a banger. She always makes her riskier choice in August. My Dark Vanessa, Clara and the Sun. And what did we just read?
I love that we have patterns now for our book selections. Like, enough time has passed that we can analyze it.
What did we just
read?
A Flicker in the Dark.
Oh, right.
Yes. But it was, yeah, that turned out to be an amazing book that we all loved, but it was a different choice for you. Mm-hmm. So, and then the Bex pattern, her second book of the year is always a hit because she's traumatized by the first book.
For sure.
Which would be Ghosts of Gotham and Four Winds.
Right.
So then her second book, Nature of Fragile Things and Girls with Bright Futures, always slaps. And then her third book of the year, she gets too comfortable, Luis Velez, The Kitchen Front, and she does something weird.
100% spot on analyses. Thank you so much.
So right now we're in the era of Snitch's departure, and I think we're all going to benefit from it. This book is a memoir by Dolly Alderton, who I think as people were reading this book, it's just like, who is this girl? Why am I listening to her? Like, what does she wind up becoming a famous something or other? No, she's actually just a female writer, millennial girly with something to say. And she actually has a lot to say. And I think she represents, I mean, she's obviously herself, but I feel like all of us probably can at least find one thing that she does or thinks or feels that we can really, really relate to, because I just feel like she's experiencing life in the extreme. And the book is about her teenage years through her 20s up until her turning 30. And it's a coming of age story, and it's a series of short stories, but not so random. It is pretty chronological, all about dating, all about friendships, all about her self-image, therapy, mental health, drinking, really every sort of topic that you think about or experience in your 20s. So there's no particular plot line other than, you know, she starts out the book as a bored teenage girl in suburbia who's boy obsessed, and she goes to university, and then she lives in London with her friends. Her friends are all getting engaged, and she's just trying to figure herself out. And by 30, she's getting there, but I don't think she'll ever be there because that's just not Dolly, you know? She's got to stay true to Dolly. So that's the book, not very plot-driven, extremely character-driven, the character being Dolly. Before we get into our DBQs, I want to know what everyone thought about the book. Snitch, we're going to start with you since it was your choice. Did you like the book? What did or didn't you like about it?
I actually really liked the book. The thing that I liked about it was, like, I just feel like there were so many things, like, in the beginning, like, oh, when she was, like, at a party in college and her friend, like, was trying to hook up with a guy and she, like, knocks on the door and is like, I can't, like, I'm wearing granny panties or, like, Spanx. I was like, yeah, like, totally. So it's just, like, little things like that where I was just, like, I just, like, felt, like, so, like, just, like, it's so, like, relatable. There were definitely some points in the beginning when I was reading it, I was more of the mindset of, like, who the fuck is this bitch? Like, why am I listening to her? But then, like, as I was reading it, I, like, more and more was, like, I think the whole point is that, like, she is just a regular girly, like, living through life, and it's just, like, her experiences, and it's not supposed to be some, like, life coach or anything like that. So I did really like it, and I also just think that it will foster really great conversation, like, between us, between the redheads. So, yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Dana, what did you think? I'm so curious.
Snitch, I loved this book. Like, absolutely adored it. I am so happy we can be on the same page. I thought it was so clever. I thought the witty takes on life, from, like, the mundane to the serious, were so poignant. I found myself legitimately laughing out loud at several times. Like, Josh kept asking what I was laughing at, and I was like, this damn book that Snitch slayed. I didn't relate to her that much. Like, I hate drinking. Her irresponsibility, like, really overwhelmed me. I, like, couldn't find myself feeling for her in a lot of moments. But there were times that I really did commiserate. Like, her takes on her friends' weddings and the baby showers and all those, like, hyperbolic, hilarious events I thought were so, so funny. And I just thought she had, like, a very refreshing self-awareness about her that I really enjoyed. Like, I just didn't want to put it down, and I laughed my way through most of the book.
Wow, a Dana Snitch crossover.
Loved it, Snitch.
It was so really rare.
Good. Wow, yeah. I'm so glad.
Rebecca, what did you think?
I'm just floored in every way, shape, or form. And I'm happy to add some spice to this conversation because it makes it more interesting. But, okay, this book was not for me. I did love – I'll start with the positives. I loved the recounting of her memories. They were incredibly hilariously depicted and nostalgia-evoking, which I really appreciated. And she – it was so incredibly well-written. Like, I can't knock that even for a second. Like, she was a wonderful writer. And, like Dana pointed out, very self-aware, which we can all appreciate. Like, that's pretty rare these days. What I did not appreciate was this woman miraculously transforming into a full-on love guru, offering advice left, right, and center in a realm that she admittedly had no grasp over. So that honestly was just like, I was rolling my eyes into the back of the head by the end of the book. The second half of the book really dragged for me, so I'm not going to sugarcoat that. And then specifically, like, the last few chapters when she was done recounting memories, it was just purely, like, recommendations and advice and suggestions. And I was like, I don't want your suggestions. I am here for the laughing and for the recounting of, like, your hilarious nights out. And I'm not saying that, like, I don't want you to grow and evolve, but, like, I'd still like you to weave in some new memories. It felt like she was just always, like, sort of patting herself on the back in the second half of the book, which, like, felt a little fraudulent to me. I don't know. Like, she just lost me. She lost me halfway through.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just finished it today, so I haven't had time to, like, sit with it and process how I feel about it. I can only really speak to, like, how I felt about it along the way. And there were moments where I really enjoyed it. Overall, I found it to be exhausting. Like, reading it was just, like, make my brain swirl and, like, made me really tired. But also, just because, like, the writing was... It was kind of dense for a memoir, even though her writing style is light and I like it. But there were just, like, so many comparisons, so many details. I was just like, it was a lot. But I liked it. And there were so many things in there that I found to be so relatable. Like, I could have written that myself. And then there was other parts of her that I found so unrelatable. And I was like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. So I feel like everybody who's reading it, or at least most people, can find bits and pieces of her story that really they can resonate with. And for me, one thing that I really did relate to and that I really enjoyed was how she would, like, talk about college and, like, doing everything for the story. Like, it brought me right back and it reminded me of college. And that's why I knew Dana was gonna like this book, because any chance she has to relive what she thinks are our glory days, she's here for it. So I really, and what's so funny is, like, it's very set in England, and even so many of the terms, phrases, words, like I didn't know what it was. It took me forever to realize that the M2 is a highway. I didn't even have to Google it. I think it's a highway. I thought it was like the train at first or the bus.
Same, oh, I thought it was the bus.
Me too.
I think it's the highway based on like context clues. So it's funny though how we're about the same age as her, and like even though we're totally on different sides of the Atlantic, like we have the same human feelings and experiences.
Yeah
having been like agree. Born in around the same time and having the same cultural references, aside from like Rod Stewart and Neil Simon. I don't know what music she listens to.
No, honestly, there was a lot of like the stuff from like the back in the day that I was just like so simply not following. Like I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, also, but then there was a lot where it was just like poor decision making, never learning, and I feel like towards the end she started to correct those errors and explain, you know, but it just wasn't enough of realizations. Like I felt like the over drinking, and I feel like that's a realization I had in my 20s too, like the relationship to drinking and how like bad it is for you inside, outside, every which way. And she comes to that realization like slowly, but never really gets into it. And I don't know. I just feel like there was more she could have, once she learned, shared her learnings. But then on the other hand, like you said, Bex, it's like I didn't want to be told what to do from her. I felt like the last 15% for me, like it felt like just she was trying to figure out how to wrap this up with turning 30.
Yeah. And that's where I feel like it felt a little inauthentic. Like I feel like the glamour of the whole story was that she was like very raw and honest with like being a shit show and like not really having a sense of what's right or wrong. And then all of a sudden she's wrapping it up with like all of this like moral holier than thou recommendation for how to live your life. And I was like, wait, this is pretty much a departure from what we've been doing this entire story.
See, that's funny. Like, I totally agree. I don't want to take advice from this woman, but I read her advice not as her actually wanting to impart it upon her readers. I read it as her making fun of herself because, like, it was at times so obviously contradictory. Like, the very first page, one of her things was like, you should always fake an orgasm. It makes both parties feel better. And at the end, it was like, you should never fake an orgasm.
That's the whole point.
I know. So I'm saying I think it was like she was talking to herself less than the audience. Like it was a self-exploration into like things she could do to work on, but not necessarily meant for us to adopt into our own lives. I have no idea if that's true, but that's how I felt when I was reading it, of like, oh, I'm obviously never taking this woman's advice. But it's interesting to see the like exact contradiction she's making from page one to page 100.
I'm not sure if I agree. I think that she was making recommendations, but maybe I'm wrong.
She was like, this is what I knew about love at 21. And the point is, you don't know anything if you think that like faking orgasms is best for all parties.
Yeah, that, and then it's like, and then it was 25, and then it was like an X age. And so like, that's kind of
I guess I'm just thinking that like, here's what I knew about love at 30 as like, the current moment, that she's like, this is the right set of recommendations.
By 30, yes, everything that she says, like she thinks is correct.
And so that's where I'm like, I don't think I want to take advice from you.
But also, like, maybe at 35, like, she will think the opposite of what she has in 30.
A sequel.
I don't know, you guys. It just didn't sit right with me, okay?
I don't know, but I do think there's a point in life, and it's not that you ever stop growing, but like, where you become a whole person and like you have a lot of the answers that you didn't have. And I think that happens really between like 25 and 30. Like your brain is fully formed at 25. So anything before that like is not complete. But I think by 30, and I don't know because I haven't experienced it yet, but I do think like, you, not that you have all the answers whatsoever. You acquire wisdom throughout the rest of your life. But like your premises are pretty set. Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'll find out as I continue to age. But I do feel like you don't hear people who are 50 be like, oh, when I was 30, I thought this and I was so wrong. You think, you know, you're in your teens and your 20s.
I agree. But there's I feel like by 30, you know
what you believe in and you know what you're about. And then you spend the rest of your life, like, building on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think 20 to 30 is starkly different from 30 to 40 in terms of your life outlook. I agree.
Yeah. So not all the answers, but getting there. Problem solving, for sure. Okay, let's get into our DBQs, which were written by our own Dana Holtzberg, because this book did not have a book club guide. So
I'm shocked, by the way, that it doesn't, because it has a show.
Me too. I'm surprised the publisher didn't put out a whole kit with recipes and cocktails and games, but they didn't, and Dana had to do the legwork herself. And I want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Dipsy. So Dipsy is one of our new favorite sponsors here at the Redheads, and they are the perfect sponsor for the Redheads because they're all about stories that match your mood. So with summer here and the smell of fresh blooms and the sun shining down on us, you can't help but feel inspired to spice things up and explore your inner desires and fantasies. You can find stories that match your mood this season on Dipsy, or any season really, especially as we head into fall. You know, it's cuffing season. You want to cuddle up with a nice Dipsy story. For those of you who don't know, Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short, sexy audio stories designed by women for women. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and characters, no matter who you're into or what turns you on. Find stories about that intriguing coworker with a British accent or hooking up with your hot yoga instructor. They even have stories designed specifically for your zodiac sign, Dana. New content is released every week, so in between listening to your favorite stories again and again, you can always find something new to explore. Dipsy also has sleep stories, wellness stories, and now they also offer written stories. It's your go-to place to spice up your me time, explore your fantasies, or heat things up with a partner. For listeners of our show, go to dipsystories.com/book. They are offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/book. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/book, dipseastories.com/book. Okay, time for our DBQs. First one. At one point, Dolly laments not knowing how it feels to be truly committed to someone, and Farley responds, quote, "You can do long-term love. You've done it better than anyone I know. I'm talking about you and me." How did this moment open Dolly's eyes to the different forms that love can take, and what does it say about their friendship?
That line changed the whole book for me.
Oh my God.
Me too, like, Snitch. It was my favorite part of the whole book.
It was my favorite part of the book, because I was just like, holy shit, like, that's so true. Like, she is in a loving relationship, like, friendship with her friends, and, like, she is capable of doing it. While it's obviously not the same, because it's not, like, with, like, a lifelong partner, like, it's still, like, possible for her. I was just like, oh my God, like, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, until Farley gets another boyfriend.
Well, yeah.
She's in a relationship.
And then Dolly loses her mind, but I don't know. But even still, like, even with that whole situation, what was his name? Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, in the beginning, like, Dolly was, like, so unwell about it. But, like, then she, like, figured it out and, like, was still, like, a good friend to her, even though, like, in the beginning she was upset about it. So, like, we knew – the thing is, like, we knew Dolly's, like, inner thoughts and, like, all of that. But, like, she – like, Scott, like, said to her, like, I love you. So, like, obviously she wasn't acting like a crazy person, like, to them.
I just love that part because – she got so caught up in equating her relationships with, like, how sexual she was with men and was so quick to define herself and put it away as, like, I'm someone who can never commit. And I thought Farley's revelation was, like, so powerful because love, the way that she was devoting it to Farley, could easily equate to how she could devote it to a man in a other relationship. And, like, without that awakening, I feel like she might still be stuck and, like, not realize that those are very transferable skills.
You know what's interesting?
I agree with all of that. I just feel like that passage and that concept of, like, friendship love became, like, the justification for the title of this book, whereas I don't think you can see the author, like, struggled with it, you know, everything I know about dating, friendships, what life, whatever, and then she wound up with love. And that's a question that we got from the Redheads, too, like, if it was aptly titled. And I feel like the Farley realization, like, makes it seem like it is, but I don't think this is a book about lessons in love.
I think I would feel better about this book if it were more about lessons of friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
she's an excellent friend.
Exactly. And, like, her devotion to her friends is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, though, she did have this realization with Leo, her first boyfriend in real love, when she was freaking out about Scott and Farley and was like, but like, she's my first priority. She's my everything. And he was like, maybe she shouldn't be. Like, maybe it's time for you to take some stock. And like, you're like, I'm in a relationship with you and you're literally telling me to my face that I'm not number one priority, that your friend is.
Right.
So it's her relationship with Farley, while I admire it and while I like, that's such a special, special bond, I did think it was overly, it consumed her.
You're so right that the whole point of that passage was to justify the title of the book. Like, that's hilarious and true. Like, she was like, oh, look, I learned about love because it has no gender, shape, or size. It can fit all of these people. And, like, that was what the title was meant to do.
And that's true. But, like, if I'm reading a book on love, I also want to hear from the person who has the companionship, life partner piece figured out.
Yes.
Correct.
And how that love really does differ from a love between friends, which it does. It's all, you know, all well and good and warm and fuzzy, but it's different and requires, like, different things in order to be sustained. And I do feel like in that moment with Leo, when he was like, well, that's weird that that's your priority, like, he was right in that situation.
I agree. Yeah. And it just felt like this entire book was sort of, like, Dolly backing into or rationalizing her devotion to Farley and being like, yes, like, this is love, like, look, and like reiterating time and time again how they're so devoted to each other, how they're the tattoo of Dolly's name, this and that. Like, it was like so overwhelming. I was like, we get it, like, you guys are tight, but like, that's not the love that like
we thought we were reading about.
Yes, and maybe it's wrong of me to put love in a bucket, but like, I don't think I'm alone. I think
no, I don't think you're alone either. I think it's like a little like middle school-y to come to that realization at 30, like, we're best friends, and that's like my love bucket runneth over.
Yeah,
when there's a lot of different like bins in the bucket.
I think her admission that Leo said that to her, that she put it in writing, like, well, maybe that's not normal, was her admitting she was realizing that on some level too. Like, when I read that, I didn't read it defensively of which she was like, can you believe Leo said that? I felt it also was read as an epiphany of her.
The passage ended with his quote. So like,
yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I agree. But then it was like years later, it's almost as if
that never happened.
That never happened. Yeah. Yeah. Something to think about. Okay, our next question. Did you find Dolly's hyperbolic passages about her friends' milestone life events, i.e. weddings, baby showers, to be funny or too cynical? So in between all the stories, and there were recipes, and there were also like mock invitations for dinner parties, weddings, bachelorette weekends, baby showers, that really, you know, call out some of the hypocrisies and extravagant nature of these events. Snitch found it hilarious.
I thought it was so funny. At first, I didn't get it. I was like, what am I reading? And then I realized, like, it's supposed to be satirical. Yeah. And I thought it was so funny.
I thought it was hilarious and incredibly cynical, but, like, in all the right ways. And I thought that it was incredibly poignant and just hilariously depicted.
Me too.
Like, I thought it was funny and well done, but a lot of the stuff, it's like, maybe it, just because we have like I have a smaller circle of friends. Like, I'm not going on hen do's, which are bachelorette parties, by the way. I don't know if you guys know that in the UK. like, that I've never been asked on a bachelorette party that I didn't want to be on, that I wasn't like happy to do everything. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like whenever I'm doing something of that nature for someone, like, I'm not just like an acquaintance who's been asked to buy a gift, even though they don't know me. I didn't have a bridal shower. I didn't have a baby shower. So maybe like, I'm just not who Dolly's making fun of. And I'm
yeah,
just,
no,
like,
you're not
like
part
girls.
Of the conversation. There's like a I'm lot of like people other... who are forced to go on people's bachelorettes that like they don't want to go on. And like, there's a billion people who have like an engagement party, a bachelorette party, a bridal shower, this, a baby shower. Like, there are a lot of those people.
So I think I'm just not like other girls. So I just like, yeah, to it. That's how I felt.
There's definitely a world of women and men who feel bamboozled by like the wedding and baby industry. So I think maybe it's just directed at them.
So much of the book in general and also in the specifics was reminding me of Sex and the City 1. And one in the sense that like our friends, by the end, they're like, our friends are our soulmates. And like any man who comes is just like second best. And that was like the vibe I was getting. But it works for Sex and the City because it's fictional. But this is this person's life. So I was like, but don't you want like
Yeah, this girl needs fucking help.
I think I think she does want it though. And like once she has it, like she'll be like better equipped to like handle it. But like
I don't think she's resigned herself to being in love with Farley from afar, and like that's her life.
I don't think that end of the book was like her being like, I'm never gonna find someone.
But at one point when she talks about, remember she's dating that guy who's weird and his dad had made a lot of money because of the fish that he discovered, and he wrote a book about it.
Yes.
And then she says, and later in my life, I was laying in bed with the love of my life who was studying for a PhD, and he pulls out that book. Who is that guy?
I think that's Leo.
Love of her life?
Yeah.
It was Leo, the timeline got confusing with like jumping back and forth between all the people. Like I was lost a lot of which boyfriend was who.
Lost during like the university's part. Like, yeah. There was Exeter, and then there was something else, and I was like, what's the boarding school? What's the university? Like, how old are you? And then I realized that you can drink in the UK at 18, so things started to, like, kind of fall into place a little.
Yes, yeah. Leo was getting his PhD, and she did refer to him as, like, who she thinks has been, like, her only love. So it was definitely him.
Damn, I thought she was, like, currently in a relationship.
No, she's fucking in love with Farley.
It's her real life. Okay, and then also Dolly as a person was reminding me of Lena Dunham in Girls. And I feel like it's that sort of protagonist that we hear from a lot. One, because those are the people who tend to be writers and want to share their stories and they're like eccentrics. But she was better than Lena Dunham's character in my opinion. But just like this chaotic leading lady who like can't get out of her own way.
That's a great parallel. I also found similarities with Phoebe Waller-Bridge in Fleabag.
What's so funny is
I read an interview with Dolly right as I was doing the outline for today's episode, and she was talking about how at first her book was published in the UK and it wasn't published in America. She said America didn't want her, and she was saying it was because the book is so English in terms of its references and cultural things that like we actually wouldn't know. She was saying how a lot of American culture is exported to the UK. Like she knows what ATMs are, alimony, even though they don't have those things, but because they watch so much American TV, read American books, like, and we're just less familiar with UK things. But she actually said because of Fleabag that she's riding the coattails of Fleabag's success and thinks that that is part of the reason why it's the her book is now, you know, getting legs here.
Great. Yeah.
I never watched it, so I don't know.
I never watched it either, but that's funny.
You should watch it. It's so fucking good.
Oh, okay.
It's good.
Our next question. Dolly struggles through most of her 20s with men, identity, weight, drinking, and money. Yet as she prepares to turn 30, she only feels nostalgia for her younger self and is deeply troubled by getting older. Can you relate to Dolly's reflections when contemplating your own mortality?
Honestly, it just made me really scared to get old.
Oh my God. Well, Dana and Rebecca, you guys turned 30 this year. I'm personally still 29. So I just want to know, like, if any of this was relatable. I wouldn't know I'm in my 20s still, but you guys might.
Wow.
Putting aside the 30 part for a second, I so related to the nostalgia of romanticizing the past when, like, Colgate, for example. I talk about Colgate as if we were, like, in a field of sunshine with never-ending laughter and no low moments. But, like, in reality, there were dark times there, too. But now that we're removed from it, it's like, oh, my God, that was the best possible time of my life. And I felt like that's exactly what she was doing with her 20s. Like, she had a really rough 20s. Like, she was totally unstable, had a serious drinking problem. And, like, only with time can you romanticize something like that. So that I related to in just terms of, like, looking back on something more fondly than it maybe was. In terms of turning 30, and I know so many people feel this way, like, I don't have that fear of, like, oh my God, I'm old, this is depressing, like, I want to go back. I don't know, I've never really felt that impending doom.
I think I would have felt more of an impending doom if I wasn't stable and confident at where I am in my life. So right. I very much understand it. I think it's very case by case.
Yeah.
So I'm not one to judge anybody's 30 mental B, but I personally was quite it was just like any other birthday. Like, and actually a few friends of mine wanted to have like big reflections and like journal or have like a new decade of like understanding and like really be reflective about this next decade. And I was like, oh shit, do I need to be doing that? Like, I like haven't even processed the fact that I'm 30. Like, I couldn't care less. It's just another day. So yeah. I think everybody is like on a different spectrum.
Yeah. As it relates to getting older, I don't know if this is just me, but I just feel like whatever I'm doing, I'm like, I think it's the thing to be doing, you know, like if I'm engaged or I'm getting married, but I'm like the first of my friends being married. So it's like, am I an old maid? I'm like, no, getting married is like once you're getting married, like that's when life starts. I felt that way about being pregnant too. It's like, who's like being pregnant is what everyone should be doing. And I feel that way about being a mom now. Like, what was I doing before I was a mom? And I just hope I carry
you're dancing on tables, baby.
I hope I carry that energy like all the way into the nursing home where it's like I'm 70 and old and wise and I'm like,
everyone should be wetting their pants.
No, I'll be like, everyone should, like, I feel bad for people who don't have this wisdom. Like, I don't know if at any point I'm gonna stop feeling that way, but I just feel like at every
no, Jax, place, that's always been you. It's never gonna stop.
Oh, okay, good. I could really see myself being 80 years old and like looking at people, even though they're like younger and having fun and doing all these things, it's like, well, you don't know what I know, you know, and no, I feel sorry for you.
You go in with like gusto when you do anything. So I think you're like, oh, I'm like moving to Florida. Like, this is it. You guys, like, get down here. Things are happening. And like, yeah. One can only wish that we have that much confidence and belief in our actions.
Yeah. Maybe it will. Maybe I'll, like, as soon as I'll like do something that I don't have like confidence in, so I wouldn't feel that way.
No, it's not going to happen. I'm telling you.
When I think back to being like 21 in college, and I was one city this when Dana was saying it, it's like I feel like the further I get away from it, it's like the less nostalgic and rosy it looks to me. Like when we were in it, I thought I was having the time of my life, and now the more I look back on it, like, and the further I get from it, the more sad it seems, you know.
See, I still look back with deep nostalgia, and I do think I have rose-colored glasses, Dana, to your point of like there were hard moments, like a lot of them, but I look back just nostalgia filled and like laugh oriented, like thinking about just like sitting in the dining hall and having rehash sessions for 6 hours about like the crazy shit we got up to the night before and like not being able to function because we were just like laughing and hungover. Like, those are the golden days. But I don't think that it's stunting me from progressing in my next phase of life.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I never thought about it, but I feel like I mostly remember, like, I know as a whole it was a great time, but I feel like I mostly remember like the negatives. Even though there were more
positives. You should work on that.
No, there were more positives than negatives, but I just feel like maybe the negatives are just more apparent now, whereas they were not when you're in it.
No, I think we've gotten to a place of like reflecting on like some of the college practices and behaviors, and we're like, that actually wasn't okay. And yeah. So I do think that that can taint your memory bucket. And I think that, Jax, like, you are just very, like, rational like that. So you're like, I'm, like, calling it like it is. And the rest of us are like, no, let's just giggle a few more minutes.
You're also, like, yeah. A buttoned-up, appropriate mother. So, like, thinking about you right. On a table wasted probably gives you a pit. Whereas, like, maybe when we get to the life stage of, like, oh, my God, we have so much more responsibility now than we ever have, it won't sound so charming.
Yeah. But no, dancing on a table, like, still sounds like a great-ass time. Yeah. I guess it's just, like, the drinking. I just, like, see it all differently now, you know?
You're mature.
But you know how I feel about drinking. Devil's brew.
I also thought it was an interesting passage when she was saying how the millennials are being kicked out by Gen Z, a.k.a. Snitches generation, and how, like, society is catering to them now and what they want. And, like, I felt like I was kind of having that realization live time while reading it. I was like, oh, I didn't realize we're, like, no longer the central focal point of all of these advertisers. But, like, she's right. Oh, shit.
That was good.
Yeah.
Snitch, did that make you feel good that you're like the new hot thing?
Yeah, but then it just made me think about how like I'm gonna be the millennial at some point. Like, then there's gonna be the right. Generation under me that's kicking me out.
Right. And that's how I feel. It's like, oh, I'm not jealous of Gen Z. They're gonna be right where we are soon. Yeah. And so it goes.
Enjoy it now, Snitch.
Yeah.
Next question. How do you think Dolly handled Farley's relationship? Was she justified in feeling abandoned, or was she being selfish and dramatic? Were you shook when Scott and Farley broke up? Let's discuss. I was so shook, and like, I understand why Dolly didn't tell us why they broke up, because it's not a book about Farley, and like, Farley's a real person.
Oh, was that why? I texted like Emily. I was like, did I miss something? Like, why did they break up? And she was like, I think she intentionally left it out. And I was like, I don't get it.
I think it was just personal to Farley. I'm sure people know who Dolly is, can figure out who Farley is, and maybe it's something that like Farley wouldn't want out there.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I did, but I was still pissed. I was like, I want to know. This is crazy.
I know. They seemed picture perfect. I was really shocked, and I 100% thought they were getting back together. I was like, don't tell people the wedding's off. They're getting back together.
I know. Yeah. Me too. Okay. Here's another problem that I had in this book, memoir. I felt like a part of her was sort of like relieved that they broke up, or like,
I didn't like that,
sort of happy that they broke up, because she had her partner in crime back and she's single at this age, and she's like, Farley is two now. And I think it would have been much more authentic for her to just give us a little glimmer of like, I know I'm a psychopath, I fully acknowledge that, but like, weirdly, mm-hmm. I feel like kind of relieved by this, instead of being on her high horse of like, it was so hard for me to see her go through this. I know there was a time when I didn't want them to be together, but I'm totally 180'd, and all I want is joy for them, and I can't believe she's going through this. I'm like, this feels not accurate. Like, I think a part of you does feel some relief.
And That's interesting. I didn't feel that way, but now in examining it, I feel like maybe she could acknowledge that she felt that way, but she would have to give away more of why they broke up in order for us to like understand why she didn't want them to be together. Like, maybe she was happy they broke up because of like a toxic element in their relationship that she couldn't share with us.
Yeah.
So instead she had to just get rid of the whole thing.
Wait, can I just say one more thing? My suspicions were further confirmed when the second that Farley talked to someone at a bar, she was immediately jealous again and was like, look at this bitch getting back into a relationship and like being like her selfish, like wanting to keep Farley all for herself ways back again.
Oh, I read that as more of like a laughable, like she told Farley for an hour and a half about all these new things in the dating world, and she needed to get on the apps and apps. Then in 1 second, Farley finds someone. Yeah. Like, I read it more like, of course she did. Like, here, big old fat me is telling her what to do, and like, she doesn't need my advice.
No, I thought the same thing. I didn't think she was like, I didn't think she was actually mad, but I think she was like, she was like, I have all the wisdom about like dating. Like, you, it's literally impossible. You can't meet it. And like, goes on and on. And then like 2 seconds later, she meets someone in person. So like, yeah, I get why she would be like facetious. But also, I do agree with you, Jackie, because when they went away and Farley was like, did you like not like him or like whatever, or like, did
have
you
any doubts? Remember,
did you have any doubts? And I didn't think she said that she had doubts, because she just like wasn't happy that she like her friend was in a relationship. I think that she had doubts because there was something that we didn't know.
Yes.
And they said that like Farley asked her if she ever had doubts, and she said yes, and Farley was like, thank you for not telling me that. And so I agree, I would like to just know what more was going on there.
Yeah.
I do. I know Farley herself even admitted in the book, like, if you had gotten a boyfriend at 22 that became your husband, like, I would have also been devastated. But I agree, Rit. I thought, like, she was a total selfish psychopath at the beginning of that relationship. Like, let your friend.
Psychopath.
Yeah, like, I was not down for her behavior. She was so ridiculous. Farley was making an effort when she, like, castrated her for saying that she texted her and it's not the same as being in person at that party in the bathroom. Like, mortifying. Like, get your shit together, Dolly. Support her. She's also been nothing but a good friend to you.
I understand, like, being, not even upset, but just, like, being, like, sure, upset that like your friend has a boyfriend and like you don't, but like that's just something that you like keep to yourself. Like, you don't ever confront her about it, you don't ever talk to your other friends about it. Like, that's like a you problem. So like, you don't make it like this whole thing.
There's
but
like
what
space.
I will say is, like, Dolly was saying how now that she has a boyfriend, she's always gonna be with the boyfriend's friends, and if that was the reality of Farley's new life, that she's always with her boyfriend's friends and she's not going to be hanging out with her friends anymore, like, that's not how it should be. And so maybe Dolly was justified, and maybe that was part of like why they ultimately broke up, that like Farley's,
maybe he
like,
was like controlling.
Yeah, maybe like she just had to take on his life and like couldn't keep her friendships as close as they were and spending as much time together, because that just wasn't their relationship. And that's not how it's supposed to be. It doesn't mean that you have to only hang out with friends in relationships.
Yeah. That was like a big one of her like life advice. Like, once your friend gets a boyfriend, here's the order of the hierarchy. And I was like, not really. Like, it doesn't have to be family, boyfriend, boyfriend's family, boyfriend's friends, boyfriend's pet, boyfriend's second pet. Wait, like,
no, for sure. But also, but that's just what she thought at that age.
No, yes, I think it was an indicative of Farley's relationship. And I feel like that's a clue as to why they broke up, because that's not healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they broke up probably because after Farley's sister died, which we'll talk about, because that was so devastating. Mm-hmm. That just is a really hard thing to go through with somebody. Yeah. Like, I think
that's what I suspected. It's like just a lot to endure with someone, and like that makes or breaks relationships.
Yeah. But he lasted 18 months.
I agree, it makes or breaks a relationship, but like, if you are the right person for one another and you're already engaged and like you've sorted out that you want to be together, I think it makes your relationship. Like,
yeah.
And for him to not have been able to, I mean, I don't want to judge, and we also don't know that this was the case, but like, I would hate to think that that was why.
Yeah, yeah. That would be pretty devastating.
Yeah. Okay, next question. When she was younger, Dolly was obsessed with being an adult. What does this say about growing up in a strict household, and how do you think it informed Dolly's actual adulthood when she got there? Well, I just think this was such a shame. She was younger and she wanted to be an adult so badly, and she's finally an adult and like she wants to go back to being a kid. And it's like, at least be obsessed with being an adult and be happy with that. At one point, she talked about how she like loved paying bills and loved all these adult things. But then when she's 30, she like wants to go back to being 21. A teenager. To me, that's really sad to never want to be where you are, and to always like at least I understand being a kid and wanting to be an adult. Like, that's understandable. But then to go back to wanting to be a kid, even though like you didn't enjoy your time. Yeah.
And I know, but we should take advice from this bitch.
It's just a waste of life.
I don't think this book is meant to be an advice book.
No, I'm not trying to take advice or anything. I'm just saying, like, it's a sad state to always want to be at a different stage in your life, and it's even sadder when you want to be in the past because you have no mode of getting there.
Yeah, and I just didn't get it. Like, she was actually excited to be paying taxes and like going to doctor's appointments because it meant she was an adult, and I was like, you didn't get to this stage and be like, oh my god, this is terrible. Like,
right. Yeah. So if you liked all that, like, why do you want to go back?
Yeah.
In terms of a strict household, I do think that there's a benefit to like letting your children explore on their own and not withholding so much from them, because I feel like most often people go, like, once they get access to something that's been held back from them, like, they go balls to the walls. I think that Dolly would have gone balls to the walls anyway. It seemed like she just had an appetite for partying and liquor, so I'm not really blaming anything on the household, but I do think that there is reason behind like letting your kids sort of live their life as they should be living it.
Yes and no. I go back and forth with this because I think that there are kids who grow up in strict households who obviously rebel, but I think there are also kids who grow up in lenient households who have access to like all of this stuff
and grow up too fast.
And I think if Dolly grew up in a lenient household, she would have just only done all of this like sooner, faster, maybe got it out of her system sooner. But I don't think she would have been walking the straight and narrow. I think it's like everything else, nature and nurture. But there's not one way that's going to ensure that your child like isn't interested in other
things. Yeah, you got to do a pulse check on your kids as they're growing up. Be like, yo, like, what kind of freak are you?
Okay, when she got lit. Like, okay, so say you have a kid that's like interested and bored in the suburbs, which is like a recipe for imaginations running wild. Like, what is the best course of action at that point? Like,
organize letting them do what
they want? Organize sports. Agree. Activities. After school. Extracurriculars.
Yes.
Yeah, not keep getting lit at the bat mitzvah where she was like fiending for her next drink after that for years.
Right. And that's wild. We went to so many bat mitzvahs growing up, and like no one had alcohol at a bat mitzvah.
No, we were not drinking at bat mitzvahs. Like, we were like making out.
I liked her appreciation for all the Jews in her life.
Totally.
Same. In the beginning, I thought she was Jewish, and then I realized she wasn't. She just loves them.
Yeah, there were a lot of Judeophile elements.
Totally. Farley's Jewish.
Yeah. Farley's Jewish. And that was just like so nice to be so seen. Thank you, Dolly.
Thank you, Dolly. 1 point for Dolly.
Yes. Next up, therapy was the beginning of Dolly's transformation from an unstable mess to a more enlightened human. But Dolly constantly reiterated how actions speak louder than words when using these tools. Do you think Dolly would have been able to grow as much as she did without therapy? No.
No, I think that because she has, like, avoidance issues. So, like, if ever anything came up, like, she wouldn't talk about it. She would just, like, drink it away or, like, squash it down. Whereas, like, on these sessions every Friday, she had no fucking choice. Like, she had to get it out. And, like, in getting it out, once she couldn't avoid it. And so, like, I think that that kind of just helped her, like, it, a lot.
This part reminded me of Good Morning Monster, and I liked it. And I liked it when it wasn't so dragged out. It was just, like, a chapter or two. Yeah. We got it and, like, done.
Yeah, I also think that she had a very good therapist.
Yes.
I agree.
Which I could also see her having not had a good therapist and just, like, being someone who's constantly in therapy and, like, just doing the same things over and over again. It reminded me of Good Morning Monster in the sense that there was...
closure.
Results.
Yeah.
Results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like, when she pointed out that certain therapists, like, allow the patient to believe that the world is against them and that, like, it's their, the world's fault, not theirs. And it was, like, the opposite with Dolly. That
yeah, she was like, no, really, it's you, bitch.
Really wanted some self-reflection to take place where it's like, oh, no, no, this is me. I am the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I just exited out of my little... outline. I'm so sorry.
I can read the last question for you, Jax. It's just, how did you...
Please do.
How did you feel about the London setting of the book? Was it London?
It was all over. It was in London in her later years, like, but she was in the suburbs. There was some Cornwall for all my Poldark fans.
Oh, man, I forgot about Poldark, Jax. The Poldark phase of your life.
Yeah, it was very English, and it made me wish that I was a little more familiar with the places she was talking about. And it made me wish that, like, if there was a show, when there is a show about it, it is going to be set in London. But I feel like this would translate so well to New York if it ever became, like, another yeah. show. But, you know, New York being the city, the surrounding suburbs, you have upstate, etc. I liked London, though. So many, we always talk about how so many of the books that we read are set in London, and... I love it.
I imagine it was very fun for London readers yeah. to read this.
Yeah, because it's really like a interactive map of their city.
And I like what you said earlier, Jack. So, like, there was truly stuff I had no idea what she was talking about being at London. But it showed that it doesn't matter. And, like, we're literally all the same no matter where we're from. Like, her MSN yeah. Messenger was our iChat. Like, we can relate even if we don't know what, like, a Dolly Lop is.
Yeah. Totally. Okay, now it is time for the redhead questions. We got some great questions from our readers. Thank you all for submitting. First up, was there a specific story or piece of advice from the author that resonated with you the most? There's a follow-up to that, but I would like to go around. Is there a story or advice? What resonated the most with you? Snatchler?
Can you go to someone else?
Rebecca?
The story that resonated with me was the story about David, who was that person that she interviewed.
And the guru.
The guru, who, like, came into her life and just as quickly left, because I had a very similar, bizarre, like, mutual love bomb. And I honestly was relieved and, like, at least affirmed that this happens to more than just me, but it was a wild experience. And reading about it and, like, the path, like, I was like, maybe they will get married. Like, this will be wonderful. And then, like, seeing him walk out that door and never come back, I'm like, holy shit, this happened to me. Like, this is the wildest experience I've ever read through someone else's eyes. So I would say, like, that was pretty wild. And then I think, like, her college memories, like, brought me right back to Colgate, like, one Deke house specifically, and it was so crazy. Like, I could see that kitchen. I could, like, see the buckets of apple pie, which was a drink that we were always drinking, and, like, it was just nutty how, like, college evoking the experiences were that she was describing.
Yeah, yes. I agree. That was one thing I was going to say that really resonated with me is this idea of like doing everything for the story. I actually highlighted the passage. She said, "We were just trying to collect stories for each other." She tells me now, whenever I question how we could all have had such an infantile appetite for recklessness and such little self-awareness, that's what we traded in. It wasn't to show off to anyone else but each other. Like, if that ain't college, yeah. I don't know.
100%.
Completely agree. This didn't resonate like on a personal level, but I was pretty rocked by the Florence chapter when Farley's sister got sick and then the evolution of pushing back the wedding, she passed away, her ensuing breakup with Scott. Like, I thought in a pretty lighthearted memoir, that was a really heavy part that I was like not prepared for.
Yeah. Snitch, any...
There's one, like, not like a specific story, but one passage that just like stuck with me. It was at this time that I was reminded of the chain of support that keeps a sufferer afloat. The person at the core of a crisis needs the support of their family and best friends, while those people need support from their friends, partners, and family. That even those people twice removed might need to talk to someone about it. It takes a village to mend a broken heart. Yeah. I loved that.
Well said.
I'm actually going through my highlights right now, and there's so many good lines in here that I highlighted.
No, I left my fucking Kindle at home. I'm pissed because I literally highlighted the whole book. But this,
download
I like
the Kindle app.
I have it, but you can't get your clippings in the Kindle app on your phone. I tried.
Damn, Count.
That's, I know, I'm pissed. Counts. But this,
maybe
I had
a follow up.
This I had a photo of because it like really resonated with me, so I was fine.
Oh, okay.
Jax, go.
Oh, do you have a passage you want to share too?
Well, it was just about like it was within the David story when like she was talking to her friend after he left and was like, he has a tattoo on his chest. And she was like, of course he does. What does it say? And she was like, it's honestly too ironic for me to even tell you. And it was like about like women empowerment.
Literally.
It was so funny to me. It was incredible. But I loved her self-awareness in that moment. That was like, it's honestly like too ironic for me to even share. It was so good.
That's so funny. I have a few. One, I think it was when she was kind of like sleeping around or something. And her mom said, she was talking to her mom. And she said, my friends and I continued to believe what we were doing was a great act of empowerment and emancipation. My mom often told me this was a misguided act of feminism, that emulating the most lewdish behavior of men was not a mark of equality. And I just feel like that's a really important point.
Message. I agree.
Yeah. Also, when she talks about like anxiety, another thing that no one tells you about drinking as you get older is that it isn't the hangovers that become crippling, but rather the acute paranoia and dread in the sober hours of the following day that became a common feature of my mid-20s.
Oh, Jax, I had the exact same thing highlighted, and I had the note just saying pit. Like, this is
hit.
This is the exact definition of Pittsville, USA.
Right. So it's like where I couldn't relate to her. It's like, I know exactly that feeling that she's talking about. And it actually caused me to like really almost entirely stop drinking. Like, I drink here and there, but it was enough for me to be done with the act of also like binge drinking, really. But not for her.
Not for her. No.
Not for Dolly. Also, this is an iconic quote. Growing up engenders self-awareness, and self-awareness kills a self-titled party girl stone cold dead. Facts.
One line that I had about Florence was, let yourself run away with your feelings. You were made so that someone could love you. Let them love you, which I really liked.
Oh, that's pretty.
Also, I loved the passage that closed out the book. I won't read the whole thing, but when it goes, when you're looking for love and it seems like you might not ever find it, remember you probably have access to abundant of it already around you, just not the romantic kind. Like, even like friends and family. Like,
of course she would say that because she doesn't have actual love, just love with Farley.
No, but she has actual love with like her mom and her dad. Like,
no, of course. I'm literally just boiling it down to like the little thing that bothers me about this book.
No, the little thing that bothers me about this book is that she didn't end up with a man.
The little thing that bothers me about this book is everything.
Ooh, wow. Snatchler, hot take.
That is a hot take. It's actually an interesting point, Snatchler. Like, am I frustrated that it didn't end with her falling in love? Maybe.
Me too, yes, I think. I hadn't even internalized that.
Yeah.
But just only because I don't need her to fall in love for her life to start or whatever. Like, I'm not just, like, trying to, you know, make her whole once she has a man. But only because the title of this book is Everything I Know About Love. And correct. That includes the committed relationship with a loved one.
I correct. Think, like, it's supposed to be, like, a contrast. So it's, like, Everything I Know About Love. And then it's, like, what she knows about love is that, like, she has love around her in, like, other ways is, like, kind of, like, the moral of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, love is all around you.
I get that. But I just think, like, in reality, it's the whole pie.
And if it mm-hmm. wasn't so focused on finding love and the process, yeah. I would maybe feel more comfortable with that outcome. But it was not that. And I think she actually was genuinely interested in finding a partner and just had trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, great. Cool. Next redhead question. This was a follow-up. If you were to write a memoir about your 20s, what would you say is the biggest thing you learned or are learning?
I can't
enjoy it. Don't take anything too seriously. It's not going to matter. And spend your time, like, embracing it and enjoying it. And you're really skinny.
Yeah. And run your own race. I feel like people get so caught up with what their friends are doing. Like, everyone for your whole life is on the same page as your friends. You go through elementary school, middle school, camp, high school, college, and then all of a sudden, like, you graduate and there's no timeline anymore for, like, who gets promoted, who gets a boyfriend, who gets married, who has kids. And it's so easy to, like, indulge in the keeping up with the Joneses mindset, but in reality, it doesn't fucking matter. And, like, 1 or 5 years difference doesn't make a difference at all, and you're going to all end in the same place eventually.
That's beautiful. I don't really think I can answer this question because I'm only halfway through.
That's so true, Snitch. This is such a big question for me. There's so many takeaways from my 20s, and I really resonated when Dolly talks about at the end how, like, she wishes she could go back to being 21 but with her current brain. And then her friend India was like, so what you're saying is youth is wasted on the young? Yeah, we fucking know. But that's the point. You can't get to this brain without having had all of those experiences and learning through your mistakes and learning the hard way. You can't have one without the other. So as much as I would go back and tell my old self something, that would mean that today's self doesn't exist.
Oh, I love that. So butterfly effect.
So butterfly effect. So meta.
Yeah, so you got to have the cringy experiences, unfortunately. Next, this might be irrelevant if you guys haven't seen this movie or something like it, but did this book remind anyone of boyhood? It follows a boy growing up, and it was exactly like that. Like, just watching a regular neighborhood kid grow up, the boy seemed like something anyone could have written about, the mundanity of life with the usual spurts of growing up gossip, which might have been the whole point of it, but usually I read to get away from life, you know? I actually saw Boyhood, and I hated it with every fiber of my being, and I did not hate this book at all. I enjoyed it. I felt like, yes, you're reading about the mundanity of life, but Dolly isn't eccentric. She's not like other girls, and she's also honest to a fault. And I do think that her perspective and story is worth reading. And I don't think Boyhood was worth seeing. Okay, so he grew, like, we know.
I haven't seen it. I have nothing to contribute.
I haven't seen it.
Don't bother. They're not similar. Sorry to the reader. I didn't mean to, like, slam your comparison. And I always think books remind – maybe you don't think this book reminds you of girls. Like, that's fine. I just really – I have a visceral reaction to that movie. Did any of you ladies read this book and think, who told this woman she had an interesting enough life for a memoir? The entire time I read this book, I kept thinking to myself, who decided her point of view was important enough to give her a book deal?
I think that's the whole point, is, like, she's nobody special. No offense, Dolly, if you're listening. Is that, like, she's no one special. She's a complete random, and it's just, like, this is her life, and, like – the point is that, like, you can either relate to it or not. And, like, it's not meant to be, like, a advice book or a self-help book or anything like that. Like, it's honestly supposed to be, I think, like, entertainment with, like, a little bit of, like, oh, I relate to that, or, like, oh, that's funny sort of thing, and, like, supposed to, like, spark conversation. But, like, in the beginning, I had the same thought. I was like, who's this bitch? Like, I don't trust a word she says. But then I just realized, like, that's just not the point. Like, if I wanted a love guru, I'd read a love guru book.
Right. And also, who said that all books have to be written by, like, people of note already? That's how you become,
yeah,
like, an author of note, is by writing your first book and just your take on life. Also, I feel like when people are established or famous or well-known or this or that, they lose touch a little bit. And so this is just a book, like, for girls like her by girls like them, mm-hmm. you know?
it wasn't her lack of notoriety that bothered me at all whatsoever. I think also there were moments where I felt bad while I was reading the book, like her suggestions of who you should be with or what your friendships should look like and her advice or whatever it might be. Like, I was internalizing my own situations and I was like, oh, that's not what it looks like for me. And like, oh, is that bad? And I was like, why am I feeling bad from a stranger's writing? That was like, that also just like maybe made me feel a certain way. And I was like, I don't want to walk away or close this chapter like feeling shitty about myself.
Yeah. I feel you. Next, why do you think Dolly decided to title this book Everything She Knows About Love specifically? The cover of the book has words like friends, jobs, and life crossed out. What makes this book and writing about love depart from a general memoir? Great pick, Margot.
Ooh, I think that love is supposed, the reason why it's written like that is that like love is made up of all of those things. So it's like the high level word.
All of those things are made up of love.
Yeah, I don't know. But like, it's not gonna be like everything I know about jobs and then like all of a sudden like relationship and like stories are in there. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like love is like the word that encompasses all of it.
Yeah, I agree.
I agree too. I just wish it said love in parentheses, friendship love.
Not romantic love. Yeah. Everything I know about not romantic love. It just puts a lot of pressure on her to be a love guru, and she's admittedly not. Next question. Hi, ladies. I'm obsessed with you all. I have literally no thoughts on how I'd rate this month's book. I don't know what to compare it to, but I definitely love some parts and was entirely disconnected from others. Anyways, my question. When you're out for the night or at an event doing anything, do you find yourself focused on what stories will come from the evening that you can relay to your friends or on your podcast? Do you ever struggle to be present in the moment because you're more focused on making the moment memorable, more exciting, or how it will appear on social media? I can definitely remember doing things in college I might not have just done for the story, but wondering if as people with an online presence and lots of space to share what happens to you in your life, you feel even more pressure to have wild stories. That's a great question.
That is a great question. Honestly, never, but I kind of wish I did.
You wish
like, I just want
did.
To do like crazy. Yeah, I want to do like crazy shit like for the story. Like, I don't.
I don't either. Definitely not for the podcast. I definitely feel like, you know, my behavior as an influencer has changed and my posting on social media has changed. And I definitely could see in the past, even like in the way that I go to a concert. I used to go to a concert and post and film and post every single song multiple times per song. Now I mean, I go to a concert. What? No, I know, but like I'm 20, like I did that when I was 25. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I go to a concert and sometimes I don't even post that I was at the concert. Like, I feel like maybe in the past, not necessarily that I'm doing things for the story, but the way that the story is portrayed on social media, like I cared about more. Now I'm just like living in it. I don't, or maybe that's just because my job has gone more from like being an influencer to being a podcaster. So it's like, I don't need to have a really long story on my Instagram. And that's not even like human behavior. That's just like my profession. So I don't know, but I do think a lot of probably podcasters experience that where they feel the need to like have a story for the show.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I feel like a lot of those like podcasts about like drinking and like sex and stuff, like that's, I feel like part of it.
Yeah. That's such a good point. But I know in college we didn't have social media. Like, I think Snapchat was just at the beginning, and like, I don't think we had Instagram. Maybe
we did. Instagram came out this summer after our sophomore year.
Okay, so we had Instagram, but it wasn't stories, you know, it was just posts.
Right.
So I feel like stories incorporate like the live element, so there wasn't the pressure of like going and posting. So I think that it would be wild going to college now and having the pressure of like getting something posted for social media. In fact, I hope that like sororities and fraternities don't allow that, because like, that's going to take away from the enjoyment of the evening.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you are just like focused on getting in someone's story and like looking cute and cool, that's so not fun.
But I think that's what it is now.
Same.
Ugh, bummer.
But I think, I'm sure it just adds to, you know, all the politics and things that you think about in college. I'm sure it also adds to the fun. You know, you get to relive the night on stories and all of that stuff. So there's pros and cons, but I do feel like it just, as I've grown up, I've cared less to share everything, but maybe it's just because I've like, now I would just talk about the concert I went to on the podcast, and that's me doing the exact same thing, you know?
Next up. Many reviews of this book state that as a memoir, it is unrelatable. Do you think if Dolly branded and wrote this book as a piece of fiction, it would have received higher praise? Which age did you enjoy the most, and did you resonate with any age in particular? Next, actually, I'm going to save this next part of the question separately. So I haven't read any of the reviews. I think that's so lame if true that, you know, if this had been fiction, that maybe it would have been better received. And honestly, if it had been fiction, people might have been like, this is too unbelievable. It wouldn't ever happen. And it's unrealistic.
I think it's kind of awesome that just like a no-name person has an interesting enough voice in writing to compel that many people who don't know her. Like, anyone could try to write a memoir like this and no one would pick it up. The fact that this many people did and it's getting its own series, like, clearly she has something that you don't.
Yeah.
Nice. And then is there the next part of this question was, sorry, do you wish that you had found or read this book at a different age in your life?
No. Ooh. I don't care. It didn't compel me one way or the other.
No, for me either. I'm glad to have read it now. And
after.
And also, we're the kind of the same age as her. So I feel like I've come to all the same realizations she's come to. And I enjoy reading it now. And also was like kind of like a look back on my 20s as I approach my 30th birthday. It's actually the perfect time for me. I feel really good about it. Snatchler?
Yeah. No, I kind of liked reading it like mid-20s, you know? Because it's like, yeah. I'm like seeing a little bit into like my future. And like, I think that that's interesting.
Totally.
Defining Decade?
I haven't read The Defining Decade yet.
Have you heard of it?
Yeah, of course.
You should read it. Now that I'm like done with my, I heard about it too late into my 20s that I don't think it would be relevant to me. But from what I understand, it's the tits. You should read it.
Okay. I'll read it. I'll add it to my, what's it called? TBR?
TBR. Especially if you liked this book. I feel like it's the serious version of this book about how the 20s, how your 20s like set you up for the rest of your life.
Yeah. How frightening.
I know, but it's better to read it in your mid-20s than at the end of your 20s when it's over.
Yeah.
Right?
I liked how they talked about, like, taking a weekend trip into your 30s. That whole concept of, like, oh, like, for one weekend we went to the Cape and did 30-year-old things, but then we could quickly go back to the recesses of safety of the 20s and how, like, you can no longer do that once you're actually 30. So, like, Snitch, you should read it now while you can just take a brief trip.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. Also, I feel
why can't we do that now? Like, I went to Snitch's party and got so fucking drunk. Like, that was
no,
like
so
my.
So you're taking weekend trips into your 20s now.
Oh, I guess you're right.
But what she's saying is, like, you know, how you might have a habit that, like, I'll say I'm a grandma, but, like, when I'm an actual grandma, it's, like, not ironic for me to be, like, doing grand things.
Oh, my God. So, like, my life is weekends at the Cape. And, like, yeah, my escape is Snitch's birthday.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Nice. Okay, well, now it is time for the moral of the story. I actually really resonated with something Dana said, and that is run your own race. I feel like that's the moral of the story, but I'm sure there are others. Snitch, what do you think?
Oh, I don't know. There's so many. Yes, backing off of what you... first of what you just said is trust the timing of your own life is one. And I don't know, something about friendship. I don't know why.
I get by with a little help from my friends.
Oh, that's good. Oh, also, cute. Like, hose over bros.
Yeah.
Chicks over dicks.
Yeah, chicks over dicks. By with a little help from my friends, I agree with. Because, like, Jax, like, I feel like run your own race is something she should have been saying to herself, but, like, didn't.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's true. And that's, like, that's something that we can extrapolate from this, but that's not the message she was giving us.
Correct. That's our message to her.
Yeah. No, I think her moral of the story, if she was here, would be, like, about, like, how friendships, like, could be, like, your greatest love story or something like that. Like, that's how she did, like, her acknowledgments were, like, at the end to Farley, like, was, like, you are, like, my greatest love story or something.
Yeah, no, it's like Sex and the City. Like, we are each other's soulmates, and any man who comes in can just hope for second best.
That line of Samantha's, like, we're soulmates, baby.
Yeah, that's it. It's that scene. That's the one. Okay, now usually we would do the Hollywood treatment segment, but this has already been made into a show. It actually came out on Peacock this week. So I just wanted to talk about the casting decisions. They changed the names in the of the characters in the show. None of us have watched the show yet, but I can decipher who Dolly and Farley are. They're Maggie and Birdie, and they're played by Emma Appleton is playing Dolly, and Belle Powley is playing Birdie, who is Farley. And upon a quick Google search, did this do it for you?
Yeah, no. This did it for me.
Who would you want? I wanted a blonde.
I think they like dyed her hair blonde, dirty blonde.
Oh, did they? Mm-hmm. I don't. Oh. Then, yeah. Honestly, I really am glad that we didn't have to do a Hollywood treatment because I really couldn't picture anyone.
Mine was Dolly like Phoebe. Kept shape shifting for me.
Dolly was Phoebe Waller Bridges or whatever her name is for me. Oh. Even though Phoebe is like a little too old.
I didn't realize like how tall she was. I didn't realize that she was blonde until I saw her Instagram. So I didn't really have a vision.
Yeah, I thought looks-wise those actresses were fine. I just don't know them that well. Like, I haven't seen many of their things. Same. I Googled it, and, like, Belle was in King of Staten Island, and I loved that movie. So, like, that resonated, but I need to watch the series. I don't know how I feel.
Yeah. Okay, well, now it's time for our overall Redheads rating of this book. I'm so excited to get our final number. Snatchler, you go first. What did you rate this book?
I'm giving it a 4.
Nice. Strong. Rebecca?
2.9.
Less strong. Dana?
I did have a 4 down, Snitch.
Yes. Holy shit.
I really liked it.
And I'm giving it a 3.8.
Okay. So oh my God, our overall you guys.
Redhead's rating is a 3.675.
Feels that right.
Feels right.
Feels high. Pretty, that's pretty good for us. No,
feels a little low, but whatever.
Feels high.
Okay, and now it's time for our other books that we read this month. That's a wrap on our recap of this book. Snatchler, we're going to start with you.
Okay, thank you so much, Jacqueline. Okay, I actually read a bunch of books. So first I read Can't Look Away by Carola Lovering. I think we had one of her books as a Redheads book. It was really, really good. I very much enjoyed it. I think I gave it like a 3.8 because I was just like not dying for it, but it was good. I mean, I like her book, so it was fine. Then I read The Hotel Nantucket by Ellen Hildebrand because I went to Nantucket. And I really liked it. I'm not like, I don't really care to read about like a hotel. So like, that's kind of where I was like, you know, struggling, but I thought it was like really cute and I thought it was good. I gave it like a 3.5, even though I know that's low. People like loved it. I just like, reading about a hotel is just not for me, you know?
Okay.
Then I read Every Summer After, which, by the way, guys, I'm so glad I did not choose it as my book.
So glad.
Why? So glad. It was just fine. And,
the
like,
usual.
It was, yeah. And it was, like, nothing great. And also, like, just the way that everyone was, like, dying for it, I was like, what's so great about this book?
It was good. I really enjoyed it, but I wouldn't have wanted to do a whole hour episode about it.
Really so much to say, but what I will say is that then everyone was telling me to read Love in Other Words, which I'd heard about is by Christina Lauren, that like writing duo. Mm-hmm. I think she wrote Twice the Blue Moon.
She did.
But
yeah.
And at first I was reading it and I was so upset because it's legitimately the exact same plot as Every Summer After, but this book is older. Whatever. I continued reading it. It was so good. It was so much better than Every Summer After, like 1000%. Like Claudia like said the same thing.
Claudia said the same thing, yeah.
It was so good. So if you're trying to decide between the two, I would read that. Then I read Nora Goes Off Script by Annabelle Monahan. And it was a really cute book. I mean, it was just like a feel good, like cute book, nothing crazy to write home about, but I read it in one day on the plane. So it was just like a nice book. I gave that like a 3.5, but just because honestly, I would give it like a 4 because I enjoyed it, but it's not like 4 material. It's not like amazing. Yeah. And that's everything that I read, which is like a lot for me.
Yeah. Good for you, Counts.
Thank you.
That's like more than you read all year so far, aside from Redheads.
Yeah, I feel like I've just been like cranking through.
That's a summer read for you.
Oh, wait, have I spoken about Crossing the Line? I think I have. The Porn Book by Lucy Score.
I've heard about it so many times I don't know about from you, but feel free to share.
It's a 5 out of 5. It's fucking amazing. It's so good. It's like Porn Central. You guys are going to love it.
Oh, my God. Okay, that's your porn recommendation. Hilarious.
for the day, crossing the line, Lucy score. Bex, what about you?
I did not read any other books this month. Sorry to say, ladies, that this just captured so much of my attention. It was so worth my time that I just couldn't imagine dedicating anything else to any other books.
With your picturesque, like, what'd you do when you were in the mountains?
Oh my God, you guys, what didn't I do? I was like running around from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. every day. Oh. Like, I was like hiking, fly fishing, horseback riding, swimming. Like, I did not stay still. So it actually was like the least likely place to ever. And I was sleeping on the plane because I was dead.
Got it. Okay, I'm going to go next because Dana's books at the end of the episode have become like folklore. So let me just get mine in. I read Uppercut, Highlights of My Hollywood Life by Carrie White. It is a memoir by Carrie White, who was a celebrity hairdresser in the 70s and 80s and like had the craziest experiences, did everyone's hair from Elvis to Sharon Tate for her wedding. Like literally everyone who you've ever heard of, like she was doing their hair. She was also an addict through the whole time, and eventually it took a really dark turn for her. But the book is amazing. And even if you're not really into like 70s, 80s stars, which I really wasn't, and I didn't even have the Elvis appreciation until I watched Elvis after I read the book, you will like this book if you like a great, juicy memoir. It was recommended to me by Lauren Bostic, and she never misses with her recs for me. So I loved it.
That's pretty
five
sick.
Stars. It was while I was reading it, I was like, this is good, but it's going to be four stars just because it's like not entirely my beat. By the end, I was like completely immersed in it. Five stars all the way. Then I read Every Summer After by Carly Fortune. I did personally think it was a little overrated just because it's gotten so much hype now. And I thought the end was so much better than the beginning. So by the end, I gave it a four because it was good. But along the way, I was like, this is the book everyone's talking about. But it was cute. And if you like a romance, it's perfectly adequate. But Margot says Love in Other Words is the better version of it. So maybe you should read that because Claudia said the same thing too. Then I read Before We Were Yours by Lisa Wingate. This book, I went to read it on my Kindle and I was like 6% in already. I was like, oh my God, I've already tried to read this book and I didn't get through 6%. So I pushed through, and once I made it to like 15%, I was so invested. This was like one of the best books I've read this year, hands down. Five stars. It's historical fiction, but the story is true, and it's one of the craziest stories I've ever heard. It's a true thing that happened back in between like 1938 to 1950 in this country, and it's shocking. It's one of the worst things it was insane. It was a journey. I loved this book. It was hard though to get through, but worth it for sure. Five stars all the way. Dana?
I'm so glad you pushed through that book because I loved it too, and it's really phenomenal.
Which is phenomenal. So funny because I told Jax that like I didn't like it and like I'm the problem. So maybe I'll like have to revisit it or something.
It is a slow start. You do have to push through, but once you make it over the hump, it's worth it.
And I think I just like resented it after that.
Okay, I read The Extraordinary Life of Sam Hell by Robert Dougani. That was a Ritz recommendation and I loved it. I gave it a 3.9. Then I read All the Ugly and Wonderful Things by Bryn Greenwood. Phenomenal book. Truly love this. One of the best I've read in a long time. But as always, it's extremely dark and triggering, so read at your own risk. I gave that a 4.7. Then I read Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby. And boy, did I get dragged by the redheads for giving this a low rating of 2.8. I stand by it. Solely because I thought it was terribly written. I just didn't like the writing. It wasn't literary. I agree that the plot was good. The topic was great. It just wasn't written in the speed that I enjoy. So I stand by my terrible rating for that book. But I understand if the rest of the masses like it. And then I read City of Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert. I gave that a 4.0. I thought that was like a wonderful, one of the best books I've read. It gives Rules of Civility vibes, so I think the two of you would really, really like it. It was, like, you should read it next. It's a hit.
Okay, great. I definitely will read that. And what I'll also be reading is our next month's book, which is a My Choice. Woo! And per my usual October fare, I'm choosing something that's trendy just because I've seen it in a lot of places. It's been on my want to read list for a really long time. And then I floated the idea to Dana and she said she had heard amazing things. It has a really good rating on Goodreads of 4.4. So we will be reading Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmis.
And, oh my God, Jax, I'm so excited we're reading this. My mom has been talking about this book nonstop. Yeah. She's obsessed with it. And I think I was like, wow, someone needs to choose this for the redhead. So I'm so pumped.
Oh my God, I feel so good about my choice. I can't wait to read with you guys next month. This episode is like an hour and a half. We need to go. Like all of us have hard stops. So thank you guys so much for another wonderful episode of The Redheads. You can follow us at The Redheads. We'll have updates about books, merch, things that we're reading, things that we're loving. We will see you on the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.